Did you?
I did.
Then we are recording. So, hey, Rob.
Hey, Jersey.
Hey, guess what I did? Don't really guess. I took a Lena to Art quest into my classroom.
Oh, no way.
And I took quest number six into my classroom.
What?
Yeah,
Cool.
because I thought this one is something that, 11-year-olds would love because it's a great exercise. Building a team of your own. I didn't call it that. I just called it build an epic team
Okay,
because
good.
an
So I just put away,
11-year-old.
I just set down the lawyer phone. So good.
No, I totally stole your thing, like line for line. I wrote down the different scenarios on the board. I didn't call it A team because I figured none of these kids would know what the heck the A team
Yeah,
was.
and they really shouldn't, and probably because of the current A team and what is, I assume, is the rated R movie or whatever.
I haven't seen it. I've heard that it's actually the A team movie was kind of in the spirit of the original show, but
I heard it was good, but I don't know. I assume everything is, I don't know.
you assume everything new is bad.
Everything's rated R or whatever, right?
Oh, well, actually, yeah, most of the time it is. Like for instance, G.I. Joe Retaliation, even though I enjoyed it, do not take Kaya to it.
Oh yeah, no way. Like
So much death.
yeah, anyway, we're just now getting to experimenting with Digimon, which it's
Oh.
intense. It's very intense, but yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Good.
Oh,
Anyway, but
I'll be
please
interested in
continue.
talking off mic about what her takeaway or her responses are to that.
Cool.
That's a cool show. But yeah, so I got 12, 11-year-olds in the room, 10-year-olds in the room, and I'm like, here's those five scenarios to choose from. Here's a big sheet of Bristol. You got to draw your team, and you have to justify under each member why they are a good fit for this team. I instituted, I don't remember if this was an actual rule in the quest, but I instituted this rule. I said, you can't pick two people from the same intellectual property.
Oh, that's awesome. A wonderful addition, but
So yeah, I said, like, you can't say, oh, well, I'll just put the Avengers together because, right?
Right. Good point.
So I said, like, and I used examples like, well, you can take Mario and you can take Sonic, and you can take the Hulk and you can take Doctor Who and, smoosh them all together in one story. Here was the thing that really surprised me. There are some kids who were really nervous about this lesson. They were like, I can't think of anything. And I'm like, you can't think of what your favorite characters are? I'm like, what's your favorite video game? I don't know. What's your favorite book? I don't know. What's your favorite movie? I don't know. Okay, what's a movie that you've liked that you've seen in the last year? I don't know. This idea of having to pick a top five really, I don't want to say the kid, there's a couple kids who were extremely apprehensive about it. But then there were other kids who were just delighted by it and loved the exercise. And it quickly turned into the nerdy, like a roundtable nerdy discussion over. Who's better, the Hulk or Iron Man, right? Well, Iron Man can do this, but the Hulk can do that, So the kids had a lot of fun with it, and I found some very interesting groupings. Like one girl had Doctor Who, Pac-Man, Loki,
Loki.
and because that was one of the things where they hacked the things. Like they're like, well, you said that we're assembling a team of heroes. Can we use villains? And here's my pedagogical tip of the day for those who listen to this thing who actually want to do any teaching. Anytime you get a question like that is an opportunity for discussion. I could have just said, yeah, you could use bad guys. But I was like, oh, that's an interesting question. And I asked the room, what do you guys think? Can you use bad guys? One kid says, no, because they're bad guys. I'm like, well, let's look at the scenarios.
That sounds so fun. I'm sorry, like,
Oh God, it was so much fun. And yeah, my big takeaway is I love talking about this stuff with kids way better than I like talking about it with adults. Because adults get so hung up on stupid surface stuff, and kids talk about it the right way. But anyway, so I'm like, well, let's look at the scenarios. Oh, there's one of these is a jewel heist. Is that a good thing to do, or is that a bad thing to do? Oh gosh, I don't know. But some kids like it's a bad thing. It's stealing. And the other kid said, but what if the jewel belongs to somebody else that in the museum stole it from them? Aha! And then somebody raised the question. Well, what if a bad guy was stopping an even worse bad guy? And I'm like, ah, here we go. Explain. I'm like, well, what if my guy wants to rule the world and this guy wants to destroy the world? Wouldn't the bad guy who wants to rule the world want to stop the guy from destroying the world? And I'm like, that is a fascinating thought. So in that case, would you agree that a bad guy can be bad yet do good? Yeah, I guess so. All right, then we've solved the problem. You can have bad guys, and you have a bunch of choices and options now on how to integrate them into your story.
Awesome.
So much fun.
That's the whole Trojan horse of that exercise, is that hopefully it's like a little story generating machine. And it's trying to assign no value to the group that you're putting together, nor the outcomes that you're putting to the motivations that you're putting to them to get together to accomplish whatever outcome. And because it doesn't mean they succeed in those things. It could mean like a kind of a nullification of it, or it could be a different form of victory or whatever. It's a bunch of forces. It's a little chemistry kit.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it. And I mean, chemistry in a lot of different senses, right? Because you're dealing mm-hmm. with character chemistry, because that was part of the discussion that we had, is that, some teams, and I asked the question, I was like, well, let's think about the Avengers as an example. Did you ever see the Avengers movie by any chance?
I did.
Okay. Yep. And I asked the room, I said, did the Avengers always just get along? And they're like, no, they were always arguing all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm like, was that fun to watch? Yeah, very fun to watch. I'm like, well, let's talk about that for a second. I'm like, let's do another version of the Avengers. And I acted it out for the room, like, hi, I'm Captain America. And this is my best friend, Tony Stark. Hi, Captain America. I like you very much. Hey, there's the Hulk over there. Hey, guys, what's going on? We're just eating cake. This is really fun. It's good to be friends. And the kids are like, oh, they're all laughing at me. Like, this is boring. This is terrible. I'm like, yeah. So what's the difference between when they argue and when they're all just friends? And they're like, well, when they're arguing, it's just fun. It's fun to watch guys shout at each other. I'm like, aha, word of the day, everybody, conflict. A little conflict on the board. Like, conflict is what, plot is character in action. Character in action is conflict. So you have to, part of your job is to assemble a team who will be fun for me to watch. And so, like, when I'm walking around the room with the kids, I'm asking them, I'm like, okay, well, you've got Doctor Who and Pac-Man. Boy, how does that work? How do they get along? Well, Doctor Who doesn't like to be wrong about anything, and Pac-Man just likes to eat. So when Doctor Who is telling Pac-Man what to do and all he's doing is eating, he's getting frustrated about it, right? So, again, the kids are writing stories as they go with mm-hmm. this exercise. So
super cool.
Oh my gosh, it was so much fun. I advocate everybody use this lesson plan in their classrooms if they teach. 10-year-olds.
Yeah. I am going to experiment with, I want to find ways to couch some of these exercises in vanilla business terms to use them in my day job sometimes. And I don't know. Just that's one of the notebook ideas I keep playing around with, that trying to find ways to make that happen, because I mean a lot of adults they get into situations where pressure, stress, different responsibilities, and answers seem so much more important than questions.
Mm.
And questioning leads to a kind of scary ambiguity that oftentimes people don't feel empowered to make, to navigate through. And mm-hmm. anyway, so I just keep thinking about how do I do that? Anyway,
I'm going to be a hippie for a second and just suggest that there's something like really primal that, I don't know, I think humans just connect to, especially nerdy humans, where, ever since we were kids, we have that discussion of who would win in a fight, right?
Sure.
That's a classic question. And it's so classic, it's almost, well, it is cliche, Like, when you think about, like, well, I'm hurting for something to talk about with this guy, so I'll just say, who would win in a fight, the Ultimate Warrior or, the Undertaker? there's something that's really appealing about doing that kind of play acting of, here's my five reasons why the Undertaker would win. Here's my five reasons why the Ultimate Warrior would win. And part of those reasons are based on, well, I just like him better, and I'm just trying to defend this. But it gets, as you debate it more, you have to start investigating what makes that character tick.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I think about adults, I can see how if you turn this into a bland, vanilla office thing, to use your terminology, getting them to play act and role play on which is going to come out on top and defend your position. Yeah, start out from the position of, well, I just like it better. But as we get more and more into it, you're debating in a fun, low-risk way. It's like debating is frightening to people, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's you inherently need to be wrong, and we think in such, you know, such absolutes, as if I've moved myself to a wrong perspective. Now I have to cover up and save face because this is about my rank among my individual peers and all this stuff that has to do with fighting for this often, but not always, false scarcity for all the, you know, goodies and power in the office.
But the irony there is that if you just flip it and say, how will this get me to think more clearly about my position, right? Even if I'm not going to change my position, even mm-hmm. if I feel really strongly, like, you are not going to convince me that He-Man is not the greatest superhero of all time, right? You can't do it.
Right.
But by coming at me with some really pointed attacks, or not attacks, but points of contention. How about that?
Sure. Or attacks. But they can be, I mean, see, part of it's, so when cats tumble and wrestle, little kittens, right? Yeah. They're learning how to kill and maim, but they're not killing and maiming each other.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, yeah. But when you're dealing with people you don't know well. You know,
oh, right. Like, yeah. That right.
The reason I'm careful about the word attack is just because so many people online differentiate between, yeah, you know what I mean.
I'm being impish by even defending it, but yeah, okay.
No. When you are in a safe and trusted environment, yeah. I mean, like, okay, so, you know, what was it, last year or the year before? Well, no, it was the last 2 years. You came over to my place during mm-hmm. Kids Read Comics, and I remember us having some of these kinds of discussions, and, like, when somebody would start to back off a little bit, like, oh, no, I don't want to push this, I'm like, no, this is the place to do that, because I love debating stuff in the right environment.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with strangers, like, yeah, it gets, or people you don't know as well, or you're not as comfortable around. But anyway, so going back to my example, like, if you come at me with some really well thought out attacks, and in my defending of my position, you're forcing me to think a lot more clearly about why I feel the way I do, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is why it's such a good idea to try out teaching, because teaching makes you have to consider, why do I do what I do? And I have to explain this to people and develop some way to train their mind to think that way. But it's the same idea. But you're right. It's like this idea of I haven't studied sociology enough. I don't have the credentials to make any kind of bold statements about where this comes from. But, you know, but it's certainly at least perpetuated by the whole fight thing that people do online sometimes, right?
Mm.
People gather around whenever there's a dust up between some people.
Yeah, but the thing is like, even in those fights, like, everyone's taking away from it whatever they felt like taking away from it.
Yeah.
So people who feel like a conflict leads to some ultimate finality, they see it as done. It's you know, this thing is, it's been decided, and it's the thing that reinforces what I believe, whatever.
Right.
But other people might see it as, you know, oh, that was really interesting. I look forward to what happens when this conversation continues, right? Because all the participants didn't die, right? They exchanged ideas and explored one another's position. That's it, right? And
right.
It's not the whole one of my hunches from you know, doing group collaboration over the years or whatnot, is that and let's see. And a lot of things can help you, you know, work through this. Well, I think the teaching, but even picking up any creative pursuit, especially like making comics, is you get into the idea of one person who maybe even lost the argument, maybe they would agree, and everyone around them would agree. if they were looking at that as, well, that's me introducing this initial idea that I had, and it's the initial idea, it's the sketch, and now I'm going to refine it, and they could come back again and again and again and keep refining and exploring and learning and adapting, and all of a sudden they become, well, a lot more capable in that debate.
Yep. There's an issue of the Daredevil comics, which I don't remember when it was from. It was from somewhat like time in the 80s, and I don't remember who worked on it, but I just remember the scene because I remember I responded to it very emotionally. I think he was fighting against Submariner. I want to say it was Submariner, who is, you know, he's the undersea guy from the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. He's like their answer to Aquaman, and he's, because he lives in the deep depths of the ocean, he's very dense and very strong, so he's used to dealing with those pressures of the deep ocean and everything. Super guy. And Daredevil comes at him, Submariner, or whoever it was, whacks him down, pow, falls down. Daredevil gets up again and comes at him again, whack, takes him out easily. Daredevil slowly gets up again. Oh, he's kind of bruised up now. He's bleeding all over the place, but he comes at him, whap, Submariner knocks him down. And this goes on and on. And Submariner, this is like in Cool Hand Luke as well. It's like Submariner says to him, he's like, stay down. this is over. And Daredevil's like getting up again. And Submariner says, if it was Submariner, he's like, wow, like you will not give up under any circumstances. He's like, you got my respect, pal. Like, this fight is over, but I'm walking away from the fight because, you know, this can't end in any way that's going to be good for either of us if I keep, you know, continuing on with this thing. But the point is that by refusing to stay down, you know, he earned the respect of his adversary. Right?
Oh, sure.
And that's not to say that by just being bullheaded and, you know, dogmatic about your position, well, my belief system, insert whatever your belief system is, whether it's Scientology or Christianity or whatever, or just your political point of view or your life stance that you've sort of like created your own credo. This says that X is true. Truth, everybody, back off. You know,
right? Truth, back off. It's not a bad saying.
Truth, back off. That's my shield. But that's not to say that like that's how you should engage with it. But by when you get knocked down, saying, "All right, time to refine the sketch," and then I'm going to get back up and come back in.
Yeah,
right. It's a dumb old idea, but I think that there's a reason that that scene is in so many stories, like Cool Hand Luke, where what's his name, Paul Newman, George Kennedy, just beating the heck out of him. And he just will not stay down. And George Kennedy, this huge mountain of a man, is begging him to stay down. He's like, come on, stay down. But he won't do it. So something that, you know, that resonates about that idea.
Yeah. Just to explore one extra nuance in there, you don't have to come back immediately.
Yeah.
You can come back after you've had a nice meal and some rest and time reflect and adapt and analyze. So,
hell yeah. Or not even analyze, sometimes just let your brain rest, sure. Right? How many times have you thought of the perfect thing to say when you're in the shower 2 days after the thing has occurred?
Oh, yeah. Well, I went to the jerk store and they're out of you.
Exactly. Not really, but no. That is funny. But yeah, you know, it's like sometimes you have to just let that back of your brain chew on it for a couple days and then ding. And then, okay, I'm ready to come back to this thing, right? But you're right. I mean, it's like I think I see this in so many of my students, and I see this in people that I engage with, you know, at shows, you know, peers and whatnot, is this idea that you don't want to lose. You don't want to lose in public.
Yeah.
You know?
A reforming perfectionist, I can completely understand that.
No, I get it too. I mean, yeah, I remember high school, and when you get humiliated in front of other kids, it's the worst. But I don't know. I mean, most of the time, even if I do come out looking like an idiot, and man, you know, there's been more than my share of times where I've come out looking like an idiot. In the latest Lean Into Artcast, I shared one of those stories where I humiliated myself in front of a book publisher, you know, and that was bad. But as long as I'm coming out ahead in the knowing is half the battle department, right? As long as I'm coming out ahead in the sense of like, okay, I've got a renewed perspective on this, then I'll endure any humiliation for that.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, I don't know. I don't. It, I'm not sure where else to go with it. It's yeah. I think we've come up with an endorsement for you know, it's like a form of adaptability and seeing that it's you know, things aren't it's funny. It's like we came back and did what do they call it? In music, is it like a refrain or something?
Yeah.
on our thoughts on failure, essentially. It's
you're in a room with failure.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that one goes up with Soldier of Creative Fortune. And is it difficult? Is it probably not a good idea? Let's do it.
Well, then add truth. Back off.
No, I hear that actually used by some people with a certain political point of view, which I won't say whether I agree with it or not, but I what I do disagree with is that as a crowning argument. Truth, back off, pal. I'm going to say X. All these people sure. are X. Truth.
Right? Sure, it's appeal to authority. And yeah.
I didn't realize what an anarchist I was.
Let's see. Endorsing critical thinking is not anarchy. you're an empowered human being.
Mm. I like talking to you. You always make me feel better about myself. you justify my existence. But yeah, no, I do. I'm gonna have to take more of the quests to my classrooms because. Mm. I thought it was going to be a 20-minute exercise, and it took over the whole hour and a half.
That's the danger with the quests.
Yeah.
They're bigger than you think, every dang one of them.
Well, but see, the students made it more than it was because I thought it was just going to be a playful thing where I was like, let's do sloppy drawing. Mm. I'm going to set a timer. We'll do 20 minutes. But the thing was, they got so precious about choosing this epic team that the funny thing is I always conclude every class with this thing I call cooldown, where I draw random shapes on the board and then I select kids to come up to the board to turn the random shapes into things. And this is to kind of like drive up the energy at the end of the class where they've all been drawing quietly. They've got a lot of pent up energy. They need to get rid of it. And then also it's a way for them to, especially the more, what am I trying to say? Extroverted kids to get to show off a little bit to the room, right? So it's rewarding the extroverts. It's letting the introverts get to work on their own while the extroverts are all doing something else and not hassling them. So there's a real logic to me using this thing at the end of class. But the thing is, the kids all always look forward to it. They're always watching the clock like, oh, is it quarter of yet? Is it quarter of? God,
that's brilliant.
Time for cooldown. Mm-hmm. They forgot about cooldown. Like,
whoa.
It was 5 minutes too. And the parents were starting to show up. And the kids were like, oh my gosh, we didn't do cooldown, you know? I'm like, well, that's...
Oh, man.
You've just been quested.
That's super cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. There's a testament to the thing you designed there, Rob.
Well, you know, thank you. And actually, I'm sure there's ways to refine it. And yeah, I would love to explore that a little bit more sometime, too, with yeah, ways to refine it. Because yep. I think... oh, my gosh. Like, I haven't taught anything the first time and thought, oh yeah, that's how I should keep doing it,
right? Yeah.
But I learned a ton in preparing for doing that the first time, and then, you know,
oh no, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it's always a draft, always, because you're always dealing with different groups of people, you're always dealing with different kinds of yeah, what do you say?
Wow, it's like really interesting thing. Like, so sometimes I'll speak to you know, other people who are into exploring teaching, And some of them can get a little burned out sometimes when they're teaching the same thing. Now, what's interesting is, like, your class is some of the techniques and how you begin and end it and whatnot. And there's so many, and so many of the lessons that you have in your pocket, your repertoire, there's so much refinement there, right?
Mm.
Like you mentioned, like, it's so freaking brilliant to have that kind of, like, some kind of arc to the experience where it's not just, well, we do one thing and we do it, you know, cranked up as intense as we can go for this whole time until we fall over, or,
right.
You know, like, that's not going to get people coming back and making a great memorable experience out of it. And so, I mean, you've got this, I think that's an interesting example of how you can continue to hone and refine.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I'm curious about the burnout thing. So I don't even have a question there, but I wanted to, are your reactions to that stuff?
Like, burnout? Well, I mean, like, no, if I did, and this is one of the things that parents ask me about my classes, because, like, I've had kids who have taken my class for like 3, 5, you know, or more years.
Wow.
And the kids' parents say, like, okay, can we sign them up again? Or is it the same thing again? First of all, even if it was the same thing, it wouldn't be the same thing. They don't realize that. That's fine.
Right.
But I tell them, I say, no, I change it up every time I do it, because it would be the worst thing ever for me if I just came in and said, here's lesson one, kids. Follow the, here's the bullet pointed list. Do this. Oh, you didn't do it? I guess you didn't do it. No, I walk in, and sometimes it's completely improvised. Sometimes it's like, well, let's see what the room energy is like. Other times it's a mixing and matching between a bunch of different pre-designed things. Like, I've talked about this before. But also, it's like, because every room is different, and even with an 8-week course, each week is different depending on the weather, depending on what's going on at school. Are they on break at school and they're just so excited to be around other kids again? You know, is it really sunny out and, you know, the kids they want to get outside? You know, there's so many X factors to work in. So that's an opportunity to say, all right, what can I do to take this energy or lack of energy and turn around? So, for instance, Sally Carson at the Ann Arbor District Library's Comics Artist Forum did affinity mapping with us to show about how affinity mapping could be used to write stories.
Mm-hmm.
I started a new teen class, and it's a smaller class. I think it's like 8 kids. So I'm used to dealing with bigger groups than that, but 8 kids, that's cool. It means I get to give more attention to them. But what this meant was the stakes were so much higher for those kids to interact with me. These are teenagers, you know? And here comes this goofy old guy who's like, I love comics. And they're like, whoa. I am not going to engage with this guy because I'm going to look like a butthole in front of all these other kids who I don't know and I'm scared of, right? And so I thought of, well, the beginning thing that I had in mind was talking about bad guys, what makes bad guys so compelling, and then I'm going to have them flip it, and they got to create the Jungian shadow for the bad guy, not create a good guy, but create the bad guy who represents everything the bad guy wouldn't let himself become, and find out where that leads them. Right? Does it lead them to a different kind of bad guy, a worse bad guy, or a good guy? We'll find out by picking a bad guy that you like and exploring his shadow. But first, we got to talk about bad guys. And I'm like, okay, tell me one of your favorite bad guys. Crickets. I'm like, oh, this isn't going to work. These kids are too scared to engage with me. Now, I could say, well, I'm just going to write some on the board. I'll just tell you about some bad guys. Well, that's not going to work, because then I am buckshotting. I may not be talking about anything that they care about, right? Like, hey, you kids like the Katniss in the Hunger Games, right? Who knows? So what I did was I thought of Sally Carson and that affinity mapping thing. And I said, all right, I got some index cards in my bag. I'm going to give you guys 10 minutes. You just got to write one thing per card of something awesome about one of your favorite bad guys. And when you're done, don't put your name on it. Flip it over. Hide it. And then I'm setting the timer, and we're going to go. And then the kids did it. And then I was like, okay, now I'm going to take all the cards and I'm going to mix them up. I'm going to wash them on the table, you know, like playing cards. And now I'm just going to read them aloud. And we'll see if we can get some discussion going that way. And once I did that, the kids started opening up because the risk was lowered, right?
That's super clever.
But it was all about, what's the problem? Kids aren't talking. why aren't they talking? Because they're teenagers and they're nervous about revealing themselves. How can I get them to give me information without revealing something about themselves? Okay, well, let's anonymize it. Let's get it to where they can quietly focus on their world and think about their thing without worrying about what the other kids are thinking. And now, and then guess what? By the end of that class, those kids were talking to me. But it was the same lesson, exact same lesson. I just introduced one little thing based on what the kids were doing. But you know what? You know what that comes down to? That comes down to me having an uncomfortable moment where I look around going, what do I do about this? And looking like an idiot for a second as I'm going, right? Whole thing about not being afraid to look like a failure, right?
Right. I mean, because how would you have the space to make a decision if you were just boldly saying, well, that didn't work, you just try something else. Well, that didn't work, just try something else. If you're not making observations about, well, why didn't that work? And what you're describing makes a ton of sense. And it reminds me about my lack of experience in teaching teens and how I experienced that lack of experience this winter. Fall winter quarter or semester. Anyway, fall semester for teaching that web design class with a bunch of teenagers that holy moly was I in a lot of situations like you described. And I tried a lot of the wrong things. Like you described what the wrong path was. I did that. I'll just put stuff up for you to react to. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah. No, I've done that too. And then all I did was dig myself into a hole because I started talking about things that were uncool, right? Like, don't you dare mention My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic in front of a 15-year-old. Because it's baby stuff. B, bronies. C, men my age should not know about this stuff, right? So I just, I discredited myself in the eyes of that kid, right? So, yeah, the trick is to, like, even if they're talking about things I don't know about, I can always ask for, you know, elaboration based on what they've submitted. And then when I say, oh, I haven't heard of that one, is that good? Is that good? Is this something I should check out? Then they get to be the advocates for the thing that they care about, and I'm being the receptive teacher. But I learned that through just heuristically, trial and error, man. You know, you only get that kind of knowledge through doing it over and over again. I have no special key to the psyche of a teenager. But what one thing I am trying to keep my mind, keep aware of is, to them, I'm a creepy old guy. Their parents dropped them off in this place with these other kids they don't know. I remember how scary that was, right? And so I can be as solicitous as possible. I can be like, oh, come on, you can trust me. Nobody's going to be mean here. There's no guarantees of that when you're that age, right? Every moment is an opportunity to be humiliated when you're 13 to 16 to 17 years old. So you have to earn that trust. The only way to earn that trust is to slowly coax them out and try to find as many low-risk ways to do that as possible.
This has been very interesting. I seriously, this is good stuff. I need to chew on this. I've got no conclusions, but I think there's more similarities than may be obvious on the surface between the 13 to 17 year olds you describe and the
adults,
22 to, you know, 60 some year olds.
Oh man.
In the business world.
You're right.
There's a lot of similarities as far as, when the connection goes well, it's because that there's been some, it feels safe. It feels safe to do that. You know, it's like, you know, my boss isn't going to yell at me.
Yeah.
I'll be able to share an idea and not get shut down. And yeah, there's a lot of ways to the affinity mapping exercise you described Sally Carson. Yeah. That's one of the safe ways to go about it.
Now, what I didn't do is I didn't take it to the extreme of the affinity map where I said, let's group these guys. Mm-hmm. But what I did do is I said, it was my basis to begin a discussion. And the two things that I think are critical in this kind of environment is get them talking about themselves. Get them talking about, like, the thing that they like, not the thing I like. who cares what I like? I'm a creepy old man. And then and the other thing is get them to do it in a safe and anonymous way. So they get to proclaim their love of a thing, but don't have to worry about being called out on loving that thing.
Right.
And then when you honor it, like when they talked about something that I was familiar with and I genuinely liked, I'd be like, oh, I don't know who wrote this, but I love this show. You know, that was a great show. Anybody else see it? Oh, it's awesome. You know, and then they're getting honored in an anonymous way, knowing that, okay, he's trustworthy. But they don't have to engage with me directly. It's a very indirect way to connect with me. So at least that's the thinking behind it. And actually, I picked up a lot of this from Mary Jo, my teaching friend. I learned so much from that woman.
There's a ton to learn from all sorts of different backgrounds and disciplines. I think teaching is just a crazy powerful skill set in general, because you're connecting with a lot of people and trying to convey what you think you know to a lot of people, and you find new insights on what you thought you knew because of all these different perspectives you're constantly being, you know, interacting with.
Well, and the biggest one of all is you have to practice and learn empathy all the time. Or you're a dick, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're one of the teachers that you didn't like.
Yeah. And I'm not going to be that guy. Nobody gets to walk out of my classroom thinking, I don't think I like comics anymore. Oh, you once asked me a long time ago, how do you get kicked out of Jersey's tribe? That's one of the ways. Sour somebody on comics. Oh, you'll make an enemy out of me.
Makes sense. It's so obvious now, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, that'd be one of those things we were talking about off mic where my body just starts moving on its own without me telling it to do something. It's just my arms just start flailing in front of me. It's like my body's saying, who do I kill? Anyway. Okay.
All right. You're the spirit of comics vengeance. Is that the end?
That was the end.
Okay. I could totally see the...
Whoosh. I think that was the title. I think that was the title of that one, too. The Spirit of Comics Vengeance. Although revenge is bad.